Oh, now he's recording. All right. Good job, Craig.
He was recording last time, too, when he didn't show up.
And nobody will understand what any of that means.
How's it all going? I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher.
I am tired enough. I am the not grumpy whatsoever Dungeon Master Jay.
Why aren't you grumpy? This is the whole be on brand, bitch.
I mean, just wait until I start talking about things, then I'll find something to be grumpy about. One of the things I want to talk about is really shitty D&D rules. So,
well, you know there's plenty of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know that always gets me going.
So, we're in a bit of a news slump when it comes to official WotC D&D products, but there was an article that came out recently on Comic Book Gaming where they found a high-res photo of the starter set that was leaked during the Hasbro conference, you know, the Hasbro yearly. This is how well we did. We made a bajillion dollars because we sold Magic the Gathering cards and started NFTs.
Yeah.
Hooray. So it's the Dragons of Stormwreck Isle, the new like starter set that they're coming out with this year.
Yeah.
So they have a higher res photo of the one that was in that video. And on the cover of that photo is Hank the Ranger with his signature energy bow and Diana the Acrobat leaping over the Blue Dragon's breath. On the pages of the book, you can see Eric the Cavalier with his light-up glowing shield.
Okay. For the people who are younger than you, and I,
so what
I
this know, means is,
I know who they are, but who the hell is Hank the Ranger and Diana the Rogue? Explain this to the people who have no clue what you're talking about.
Back in the 1980s, there was a Dungeons & Dragons cartoon. And though that world, what it was never like an official setting or anything. It was just like, hey, here are kids that went on a roller coaster and somehow wound up fighting Tiamat in their very first session of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, they ended up getting lost in some mystical world, and occasionally the Dungeon Master would claim he was going to take them home.
And he never would.
And he never did. He was such a lying piece of shit.
There was about 25 episodes. You can find it on YouTube, I believe. You can find it on DVD at Walmart in the $5 bin. The characters themselves were never in any official Dungeons & Dragons works. There was a couple like winks and nods, depending on a few video games and other books. 3.5, I think, showed off one of the character stats. Presto was rumored to be an apprentice of Elminster. In Baldur's Gate 2, it was mentioned that those characters actually existed, but were eaten by Tiamat. So, I mean, like they've always been like a part of the D&D mythos, but never like an official part of the setting. So, if they were to actually be in this Dragons of Stormwreck Isle, this would be the first time they're actually in print on something, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Another funny thing to note is, too, is when Acquisitions Incorporated did like, maybe their second, or maybe their first, like, live performance on stage at PAX, they all came out dressed as their characters. So, Mike Krahulik came dressed up as Jim Darkmagic. The other guy came up dressed out as Omen Drawn. Scott Curtis came dressed out as Binwin. I think Will Wheaton was there as his Elven Ranger or character. Avenger. I can't remember what it was. His name was.
And his. But Chris Perkins. Eyes.
Chris Perkins came out dressed as the Dungeon Master.
Yeah.
And the Dungeon Master, for those who don't know, is basically a short, like super short dude with like missing the top of his hair with long like white hair.
He looks like Danny DeVito with white hair.
Yeah, Danny DeVito with white hair and a giant red robes.
Yeah.
So, there's that $14,000 statue coming out here soon, too. That's, oh my depicts God, that depicts that Tiamat and the little kids. We talked about that episode or two ago. So, it's interesting that they may actually bring these guys into actual official lore, which it would just be neat, you know?
So, truthfully, they could easily do that. You know, they're already... Yeah. They're looking to just... Say, you can play in all these realms all together, nothing really matters anymore, so have these characters show up in your campaign or whatever, and that's fine. But what I hope they do, if they're in that book, or if they're on the cover, specifically if they're on the cover of that book, I hope they're on the cover, and then there's no mention of them again. Which would be exactly what they've done throughout the course of D&D lore. You know, just a little wink and a nod to them, but never have anything official with them.
Yeah. I did see, like, the rumored official stats of the cartoon Tiamat, and it's like a CR5 dragon.
I think we talked about it off the podcast. I think.
Yeah, it's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, like, I'm still of the mindset that they were fighting the CR20 or 30 or whatever the hell Tiamat is, and got lucky, you know.
By the way, if you are an aspiring DM out there, do not put your first time level 1 characters up against Tiamat. No. In no world is that fun.
No, do not do that. Don't even have Tiamat in the game until they're, I don't know, level 15 at least. Yeah, you shouldn't be seeing dragons until you've got a few levels under your belt.
Listen, you can bring in an ancient white dragon when they are level 4.
Yeah, apparently you can, especially if it's completely fucking blind and has a dead person on its back. But, you know.
So, that leads into my next fun conversation. In Adventures League this week, my group went out to the Dark Duchess, and they did that entire encounter there, and our Veatrice, whatever her name is, the ancient white dragon, landed. I put a video up on our TikTok. That's the only video we have on our TikTok right now.
I didn't see it on TikTok, however. I saw it on Instagram.
With me grabbing that thing off the wall and, like, slamming it down because I bought it. I bought the mini. I told my wife, like, hey, I'm running Adventures League. If they do the Dark Duchess and they're going to come up against this white dragon, I'm going to buy that white dragon and use it in that encounter. And that's exactly what I did. One person died. The other ones convinced the dragon to let them go.
They didn't just run away?
I was rereading the adventure this time. How can you run away?
Because it's blind.
It's blind outside of 30 feet.
Yeah.
If it's within 30 feet, it sees fine. Yeah. And it's on top of the ship. Okay? So they're in the hold, trying to free the treasure. It's on top of the ship. Okay? So it can see everybody in the ship. And for them to escape, they have to run up to the top level of the ship and, like, run away from it.
Yeah, okay? You don't have to be the fastest, just don't be the slowest.
Right. But if I want to be really bad about it, when we roll initiative, the first attack is Dragon's Breath. They're dead.
Well, if they're in the ship, then they're fine.
No, they weren't, because she sticks her head into the ship.
Can't see every room in there.
They're in the treasure room. That's where her hole is.
Did they not catch Worm Sign when they got on the boat? Like, it was pretty damn obvious from the description.
Worm Sign?
Yeah, the fact that there's, like, claw holes in the side of the boat and everything that's in the description.
No, they did not take a moment to look at anything or look at any rooms. They got up to the top of it. I read off all the claw marks and stuff like that. They found the troll, okay?
Yeah. Yep.
And didn't bother to go, hey, are these claw marks the same size as the troll claw marks? They just went, no, there's a troll there. And that was it. They were done. That was their logic.
And thank you. Yeah. And that is why you do not have dragons against level 4, especially Adventures League players, ever.
So then they were out there just, like, trying to get to the treasure, and that's when she just showed up. It's like, bam, hi, here I am.
Yeah.
So I was nice and didn't just start the round with breathing frost dragon breath on him. One person hid. The rest of them did some roleplay and try to talk to her. The player that's the kobold did what kobolds do and immediately swore fealty to the dragon.
Of course, naturally.
And this is the same guy who, back when I started talking about Adventures League and doing it again, tried to basically converse his way with the Archfey in the Feywild and couldn't land a single roll above 10. Okay? This guy got a 19. He rolled a critical on his persuasion, minus his 1 for a 19. And then I rolled for the dragon to see what she would think. She got a 3. And I was like, even if I had 13... it still fails. So she was like, sure, yeah, you can join me.
I mean, to be fair, it'd be good to have a minion to, you know, help clean up the guy on the back. Yeah, things like that. Yeah.
Well, there were kobold minions in the ship, And they did mention that the troll killed them, and they weren't wrong. So they actually tried a persuasion check that, and against her insight, and they passed again. And there's just the bard character was like, I'm giving you guidance. He's talking, and all the stuff that he's saying was working. He did try to kind of like convince the dragons, like, hey, why don't you fight the Frost Maiden? Don't you care? And the dragon's like, no, I don't give a shit. And he was really perplexed by that.
I like cold weather.
I like cold weather. This is great. Love it. I don't care about her. But she's taking over everything. It's like, not my home. But he didn't know it, you know? It's like, I don't care if she freezes this whole place over like in 100 feet. I'll just like dig around in the snow and have fun. I'm a puppy.
I like cold weather.
So they talked your way through everything, and they did pretty well. I basically helped seed the whole idea of going to Grimskull in obtaining the Frost Maiden's book at the very bottom of that, because I didn't feel like that was seeded enough. So, I mean, the people are supposed to do that for you in the next chapter, but I kind of want to give them more things to go there. So she gave them a month to go over there and get that book. And it's going to be very interesting because they're also going to get the quest to start the next chapter. And who knows what's going to happen there.
Yeah, like I'm just thinking about it because it's hard to, having run Icewind Dale, because you're sort of running it haphazardly because it's an Adventures League thing. Like that's a major part of the actual storyline. But you've still got all these little side quests that I thought you were going to be running for Adventures League.
It is what it is. What happens at the table happens for everyone that's been playing the hard to cover book. So like if they miss 3 weeks and come back and like, but I wanted to go here and do this for them. It's like, well, you missed those weeks. They went there. They did the complete opposite. Remember the person you're supposed to turn in for a bounty? Yeah, they befriended him and stabbed him and then ate him. Like, the group is kind of crazy like that.
It's Adventures League, man. Yeah. But yeah, I don't like the idea of using dragons for brand new players, especially. And maybe they're not all brand new, but I know the vast majority of them are. Because they're not necessarily going to notice the fact there might be a dragon there.
And that's specifically why I did not start with the hostilities with the dragon like the book wants you to. Like, the book wants you to kind of toy around with them for a little bit and then murder them.
Yeah, which is very dragon-like. I mean, dragons aren't all... You don't necessarily want to freeze the first thing you've seen out there. Maybe just, you know, chop it into little pieces.
So, it felt good, and like I said, they were really good with the rolls. The dice were on their side that night. Another fun thing I had to happen was, is like, when the dragon started attacking people, I was going to have her attack at disadvantage just because of the eyes. Give them as much possibility of survival as possible. I actually went to like the front counter where all the workers were going, and I actually had them roll like the first like 10 attacks from the dragon. So at disadvantage, and half of them never played D&D or even knew what was going on. So there's rolling 2d20, and I don't think a single one of them rolled above a 16 at disadvantage. So it is what it is.
All the modifiers, that's still over a 20, but yeah.
Yeah. One person did piss her off, and she did hit him, and he survived.
I mean, what level are they? Fourth?
They were four, yeah. This brought him up to five.
Yeah, that'd give him enough hit points to survive a hit.
Yeah. One of the players hid the second she showed up. Like, he ran to where this goat was and hid there. And the rest of the group, eventually, they left. So he hid there with this goat for 3 days.
Oh my
gosh. Having him make stealth checks and con checks, because the dragon's not leaving. Like, she's just kind of like hanging out there talking to whatever the wizard's name is, Mal.
Right.
I was going to say Malfurion, but I know that's what it is.
I have no idea what it is. I don't remember at this point.
So she's talking to the dragon because she's insane. And I eventually have the goat start bleeding. Like, because he kind of failed an animal handling check. So the goat starts bleeding, and the dragon kind of starts yelling at the goat from the top of the ship. And he tries his luck. He's like, ha ha, I'm not a goat. I'm actually a wizard. And like, that was the worst thing possible he could say, because I've actually did a little bit of the reading up on the dragon and her rider.
Uh-huh.
And there were a lot of wizards that tried to basically usurp her rider and take his power. But a second is, haha, I'm a wizard. Like, that surprise. Her immediate instinct was protect the rider and brr.
Yeah.
So he took the entire breath of the her breath there.
That's a dead character. If I was him, I probably would have just released the goat, and when the dragon looks after the goat, I take off running in the other direction.
That may have worked. So we actually did the breath. I had him roll the 16d8 or whatever it was. It was exactly double his hit points. So he died. But he had enough money to resurrect. That was the other thing, too, is that when this encounter showed up, there was no... If the fight broke out, there was no chance that they were not going to get TPK'd.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
you're not fighting a dragon right. at level 4. You're just not.
So what I had him kind of do to kind of, like, get TPK'd but not actually get TPK'd at the same time was... that they had to hand over all their gold and valuables to the Dragon Horde, like add it to the Dragon Horde. So essentially, you know, if they would have died, if she would have showed up, she stuck her head in and breathed, and everybody died, which was what the book says to do, it's 100 gold in their back in Adventures League. But if they take 100 gold and they throw the 100 gold onto their pile, onto the dragon's pile, that's essentially resurrecting from a cost perspective. So, they actually spent more than a TPK. People lost, like, their religious symbols and stuff like that, and a few other stuff.
Yeah, but that's...
They were able to slide a hand check away, a few things away, but overall, they came out of the net negative.
Yeah, I mean, truthfully, through role-playing and whatnot, it makes more sense to pay off the dragon. You know, sure... Yeah. Technically, because it's Adventures League and they can just resurrect for 100 gold or whatever, sure, you're losing more by role-playing it, but it, you know, that's the idea is to role-play it. If you have to pay off this dragon and it costs you everything you've got, you know, if you want to live, do that.
Yeah. Because they're playing hardcover books, they're not getting the continuous rewards that you get from running Adventures League. Like, usually, like, every time you run a session, you're getting like 400, 500 gold. Ah, ha, ha. Everything's right. Crazy. Because they're running the hardcover book, they're only getting what they get or what they earn. And no one's like looting everything and bringing it back to town.
I was going
to
say, let me tell you, in Icewind Dale, that isn't much.
Right. So now that they're, because they survived an encounter, they're now level 5. They just went to, just got to 4. They did this encounter, and now they're 5. So now it's a tier 2 table. The tier 2 table is 300 gold to resurrect. They're not going to be getting 300 gold anytime soon.
Yeah, my players were able to get money, but they got most of their money in Icewind Dale off of just one thing.
Yeah.
It was never a consistent income.
Someone on our Icewind Dale... our Rhyme of the Frost Maiden was actually talking about how he sent his players out and they came back with something like 30,000 gold. And I didn't read the details of it because I just kind of saw it in passing, but I was just like, I don't want to know how your players went out and came back at level 6 with 30,000 gold.
Yeah, that seems...
What did you do that was... Did they, like... What did they do?
I don't want to give too many spoilers, but there was a thing that you were able, you had the potential to get it and sell it for a few thousand gold. I don't remember exactly what level, 3 or 4, maybe 5. Like, it's relatively early in the campaign. But that's the only thing I can think of. And when I say a few thousand gold, I'm talking 1,500, 2 grand. Not a ridiculous amount. Not sure as hell not 15 or 30,000.
Yeah, so my players just returned from Chapter 4 richer than ever. What can he do with that money?
Chapter 4 is pretty late.
Yeah, but it's only that one thing. There's not buying land levels of money there.
Oh yeah, I mean, what the hell are you going to do with 30 grand in Icewind Dale? You can't buy anything.
Yeah.
There's nothing to purchase with it.
I mean, there's people are saying, giving him suggestions like, go to the Dwarven Valley, they can buy stuff there, you know. It's really weird how they came back with that much money, unless they, like, somehow, like, disassembled a couple key weird creatures and, like, sold them for parts or something.
Yeah, look, they could easily be running some variants and stuff. They, you definitely pick up a number of magic items along the way, but there's nowhere to sell them. Nobody has that much money in Icewind Dale. So maybe they had technically 30 grand worth of stuff. I could believe that, but not actually 30 grand.
Right, right. So that's, it's just really weird. So I'm very interested with how the game goes from here, because no one has 300 gold. They're not beginning to be getting 300 gold anytime soon. So if a player dies, there's no way to bring them back. And they're just going to be off my table at that point in time, you know?
Yeah, and Icewind Dale is pretty brutal. If you don't, if you're not careful, if you don't know what you're doing, and Adventures League players a lot of times don't,
At this point in time, they're not newbies. I mean, you're always going to have like, oh, what does that spell do? Or what does this do? Because I do.
Yeah.
But at this point in time, they're, you know, the decisions are their own. So don't fuck around and find out, because you'll find out it will be negative. But I think a lot of them has learned that's how Icewind Dale works. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the players told me very specifically in those exact words. So
one of them did try to tell a dragon that he was a wizard.
Ha ha! I'm a wizard.
As opposed to attempting to run away.
Yeah, it was entertaining though. I enjoyed it. So yeah, I got those pictures. I got all the pictures up on Instagram and stuff, and I got the video on TikTok. And TikTok did something; it shared. I don't know.
I saw it on Instagram, so I'm guessing it shared it there.
Cool. Follow our social medias. Just search for Grumpy Dungeon Masters, and you can find us.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find us.
So it was crazy. I love the figure, by the way. My daughter's been sick, so I've been trying to like make her happy. And one time I kind of like took the dragon, I was holding it by like the tail, because it's a huge figure. It's like the size of my cat.
Yeah, you know? I saw it. It's big damn figure.
So I took it and I was holding it, and like I flew into her room going swoosh, 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 and then I landed next to her and I was like, "Hi, Maddie. I'm a dragon. How you doing?" She's like, "Oh, hi, dragon. How are you?" Now, she's got like 103 fever, so she's probably hallucinating. Thinks the dragon's real. And I was like, "Hey, you need to take this medicine to feel better." She's like, "Thank you, dragon." She took a little medicine. I did it like multiple times with the dragon, so she probably thinks dragons are real now.
Yeah, dragons are just doing the Lord's work.
Oh, crazy. So did you do anything fun this weekend?
Yeah, I played some D&D. We played a bit more of the pirate campaign. Nothing specifically to talk about. No more tales of Seabeard. We did go and get him a bird, though, although I ended up keeping it. You remember
what you needed? What you need to do is you need to find a bird for Seabeard, that, and then get a really tiny belt of Dwarven kind for the parrot and put that on the parrot.
That's actually a really good idea. Yeah. Except I'm probably, well, I'll give him a parrot, but we found a bird of paradise. I'm keeping that son of a bitch for myself, I think.
Yeah, you can tap it for any mana.
Yeah, exactly. Tap it for any color of mana. That's pretty much all I did over the weekend. A little bit of D&D, played some Magic Friday night, the normal. So I was reading this thing on the DM's resources group, and you know, we get all sorts of weird questions and just stuff on there. And I don't have it up in front of me, but the basic idea, so a DM got into an argument or a discussion with his players. He had I think it was a hill giant. It was either a hill giant or a stone giant. And they have multi-attack.
Yeah.
And for one of the attacks, he used it as a grapple. Now, per the D&D 5e rules, If you have multi-attack, you can use a grapple in the place of an attack. That is the actual rules as written. But the players were pretty adamant that he couldn't do it, because when you look at the monster stats for the creature, it says he has multi-attack with a club. So the argument was, does he have multi-attack without the club?
I'm not sure. I'm not on DM resources. I'm actually on Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeon and Dragon Master advice group, which is a different group than the one that always has the crazy stuff. And literally that was the question, that the first thing that loaded up was that question. So my understanding is that grapple is an action.
There, I sent you the stone giant stats so you can actually see specifics. Okay.
So grapple says when you grab a creature, I'd look up grapple just to verify. It says when you want to grab a creature or wrestle with it, you can use the attack action to make a special melee attack, a grapple. If you are able to make multiple attacks with the attack action, this attack replaces one of them. So I guess the question there was that because it can only make a multi-attack with the stone club, is that...
Yeah, well, it reads multi-attack. The giant makes two great club attacks.
Okay.
It doesn't... Do monsters follow the very specific rules as players? And in my opinion, as a dungeon master, yes, they follow the same rules as the players. It could make a shove attack. It could make a grapple attack. But I can at least see why they could try to make that argument just by the way it's written. Because it specifically reads multi attack. The giant makes two great club attacks. I'm always going to side on the idea of creativity. If a person can make a grapple attack, a giant should be able to make a grapple attack.
So there was a Sage Advice column about this specifically, and the question that gave this answer was this: is the grappling rule for the player's handbook usable by a handsless creature?
if it's got a mouth, I guess.
It says. The grappling rule, PH195, was written for a grappler with at least one hand, but a DM can easily adapt that rule for a handless creature that has a bite or an appendage, such as a tentacle, that could reasonably seize someone. A wolf, for example, could plausibly try to seize a person with its bite, and the animal wouldn't be able to use its bite attack as long as it held onto the person. Keep in mind that the grappling rule in the player's handbook requires the action... So a creature must take that action, rather than the multi-attack or another action in the creature's stat block when it uses that rule. A monster such as a roper has a special grappling attack that doesn't follow that rule when using its attack. So what it's saying is that if you look at the stone giant stat, multi-attack is the action itself. That allows a giant to make two great club attacks. So if the stone giant has a great sword and not a great club, it can't do multi-attack because it doesn't have a great club.
Really? That's not how I understood that when you just read that.
No, so multi-attack is lets them give multiple attacks. So they can't do the grapple and an attack, okay? Because they have to use their action to trigger multi-attack. And then multi-attack specifically says the giant makes two great club attacks. And because Great Club is written there as Great Club, they can only use a Great Club to trigger multi-attack. They can't use a Great Sword. So that's why some monsters are written, this creature can make three melee weapon attacks. And some don't have that.
Now I'm going to look this up myself because I want to read grappling. I think we're going to disagree on this one.
I mean, you could rule whatever you want.
I think the actual rule is different.
Well, the actual rule is you can grappling states that If you want to grab a creature or wrestle with it, you can use the attack action to make a special melee attack, a grapple. If you are able to make multiple attacks with the action attack, this attack replaces one of them. Okay? Now, monsters don't have the same attack that a player does. Player has, when you take an action, or when you take your action to make an attack, you can make an additional melee attack
as part
of that action. So
I actually do have my player's handbook here.
So because grappling is just an action as a whole, they can
It's all a matter of the wording. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you actually probably are right on this. And it's very specifically because players do not have multi-attack. They have They have extra attack.
Correct.
It is not the same thing.
Correct. So because the monster has to trigger the multi-attack action, and that has its own specifications to that,
they can't substitute that
attack with a grapple.
Yep.
They can do one or the other.
Yeah, I actually would agree with that, just because I talk about this a lot on here, but very specific wording matters with games like this. Now, as a DM, you can always just override that. Truthfully, in my own campaign, I probably will at some point. But the rules as written, that probably is the case, because extra attack and multi-attack are not the same thing.
I mean, I know I haven't followed that rule. And honestly, I didn't realize that was the rule until this very moment.
That's why we
look at it.
Got this deep dive.
Because one of my players fought a giant solo. And it was Bruce did it. I mean, we talked about that just when he was on a couple minutes ago. He did his multi-attack to grapple the guy and then throw the guy.
Yep,
that wouldn't have worked, technically, by the rules.
We did that in the pirate campaign, not this weekend, but last weekend. Because one of our players shapeshifted into an earth elemental and grabbed a guy and then threw the guy.
They can't do that.
Yep. Rules is written, he can't do that. He cheated.
But this is such a nuanced specific.
Yes.
I would almost not run it this way.
Yeah.
You know, I would think it just more logical. It's almost more logical that, so multi-attack is the action that they take. But I still would probably run it if it's just for flavor of combat. Like, they grab you and then they hit you. Or slam you in the ground or whatever. That's the two attacks, and it does relatively the same damage. Because when you're designing monsters and you're designing what they are, when you bring in CR and their strength and all that, the requirement is how much damage are they putting out per round. So the stone giant in this case has two attack actions. He's got his great club and his rock. Okay, the great club is 3d8 plus 6. It averages at 19. The rock is 4d10 plus 6, which averages at 28, but it also has a strength saving throw or be knocked prone. So you're looking at like between 30 and 40 damage, because he can do the great club twice. That's basically 19 plus 19, 38.
Yep.
And the rock is 10 less damage than that, and you go prone. So if you take multi-attack as a DM, and you're flavoring it up instead of just, he rolls a great sword, a great club, and he misses. He rolls, he hits, blah, blah. I mean, if you're trying to flavor it up, that's your damage window. That's the damage you want to get. So have the two rolls happen, and then be somewhere between 30 and 40 damage to the player for that successful action for the stone giant. And you're meeting that range that the stone giant's supposed to be in for damage per round.
Yeah, see, and me as a DM, I would probably allow that creature to throw a rock and take a single great club. Like, I'm going to allow it to make two attacks. And that is not rules as written. That's just how I, as a DM, would allow it. Even if that damage goes above that number that you're talking about, it still just makes sense that it could do those two things, since it's supposed to have two actions.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting that that's how they wanted it to work for the monsters. I never actually saw multi-attack as an action before. I'm surprised that it actually is. But it makes sense now that I look at it. Yeah,
and I understand why they write things that way, because they want everything super, super streamlined. So people can't say this is overpowered. This isn't, you know, this is underpowered. They're just looking at numbers.
Yeah.
They're not looking at the creativity behind it. If you want the creativity behind stuff like this, you as the DM have that option. If your players complain that a giant took two separate types of attacks in a round, tell them to shut the hell up in a much nicer fashion than that.
Yeah.
It's your table. Don't be rude, obviously. Work with your players, but you're trying to have a little fun here. You're trying to tell a story, and a giant making two separate attacks isn't going to break the game.
Right. I mean, so the players were kind of right to call foul, but at the same time, too, just let the DM tell his little story, you know?
Yeah.
If all of a sudden, you know, the Stone Giant is doing 160 damage per round, that's a problem. Yeah, with the
it's a little different. Unless your characters are all, like, you know, 600 hit point characters, yeah, then nobody cares. But
to be honest, what Bruce was doing to the player was less damage overall than the three great axe attacks it could make per turn.
Yeah, picking up is zero damage, and throwing him, yeah, it probably takes a couple d6 hitting a wall and a couple d6 falling.
It was a couple d10 for hitting the wall, and then it was like, I think the room was 20 feet high, so it was just 4d6 for falling.
And 2d6.
2d6.
Yep.
I keep thinking it's 2d6 per 10 feet.
That's one of the rules I'm going to bitch about here in a couple of minutes.
All right, we'll bitch about it now.
Oh, all right. Well, I was scrolling around on the internet, as I do, finding really stupid D&D rules, and one of them is falling, which we've talked about it at least a little bit on here. Falling makes no sense. The fact that for every 10 feet, you only take 1d6, that means that a decent level character could literally just jump off a 100-foot cliff and walk away fairly easily. You know, if you're 10th level and you jump off of a 100-foot cliff, what's that, your average? You're going to take like 50 points or something, and you're going to have more hit points than that. It doesn't make any sense. It's a stupid fucking rule. So I actually thought up a better way of doing it, and I maybe in the future they'll do it this way, although I wouldn't count on it. I feel like for every 10 feet you fall, it should double. So if you fall 10 feet, it's 1d6. That's fine. But if you fall 20 feet, then it's 3d6. Or sorry, I can't math. It would be, it would be 3d6. And then it would go to 6d6, then to 12d6. So if you're falling 40 feet, you're then taking 12d6. It's much more realistic. You're going to take a lot more damage from that.
So I looked it up. I just wanted to re-verify. So yeah, falling in 5th edition is for every 10 feet you fall, you take 1d6 bludgeoning damage.
Yep.
To a maximum of 20d6. And then you land prone. Unless it avoids taking damage from the fall. Then I want to say,
I actually didn't even know that part. Well, that's stupid. Yeah. That means you cannot land on your feet after falling 10 feet unless you can just reduce damage to nothing.
I mean, technically, so like if you're a fighter and you're in plate or you're in heavy armor and you have a heavy armor mastery and you jump off 10 feet and you land and the damage is 3 and less, you land on your feet.
Yeah. But that's because you're reducing the damage to nothing.
Yeah. So falling in 4th edition is even better.
Oh, falling damages better as in worse or better as in it was a better rule?
Shh, yeah, let me read it. In 4th edition, a fall of 10 feet or more may inflict damage on a falling creature. The creature takes 1d10 damage for each 10 feet it falls, up to a maximum of 50d10 for a fall of 500 feet or more. A faster alternative damage calculation for falls of 50 feet or more is 25 damage for each 50 feet plus 1d10 for each extra 100 feet. When a character trained in acrobatics falls, the character can make an acrobatic check as a free action to reduce the damage he or she takes from the fall. One half of the result of his or her acrobatic check rounded down is subtracted from the falling damage. My creature that is flying, when it begins falling, descends the full distance of the fall, but subtracts its fly speed from the distance of the fall for purposes of determining falling damage. For example, a flying red dragon with a fly speed of 8, 40 feet, takes damage from the fall, as though the fall was 40 feet shorter and does not take damage from a fall of less than 50 feet. Creature that takes damage from falling falls prone when it lands. And this is why 4th edition was bad.
you're still talking. Oh my god.
You look at 5th edition and it's just like one paragraph and you're done. You look at 4th edition and it's like, okay, if this, then this. If this, then this. If this, and it's like 14 pages later.
I'm actually impressed. They managed to outrule 3rd edition there. Because 3rd edition had a lot of rules and a lot of number crunching. And 3rd edition's falling damage, from my understanding, was exactly the same as 5th edition. Just very, very simple. I don't even know what the hell you said half of the time.
No, it was very mathy. Like, you know, the whole, like, the thing they have for falling there and, like, you know, reducing the fall height by that amount. You know, like, that's cool if you really need to get that munchkin about it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole idea of being trained in acrobatics and reducing the fall damage a little bit. That makes sense.
That was a thing in 3rd edition. Monks could just sort of, I think, half the damage, or maybe even if they were within 5 feet of a wall as they were falling, they could reduce it or take nothing.
Yeah.
But that it was still a very simple rule. It wasn't difficult.
So I want to give you this scenario because I'm bringing this up. I was playing the Owl campaign. All right.
Yeah.
And I think the party at this point in time was a Haragon monk at level like 6 or 7, a wizard, the wizard blade singer, the elf ranger guy, the barbarian tentacle guy, and my wife was playing somebody at this time. I can't remember. I think she's playing the cat. So they climbed up to where the library was, because they had to kind of go back through the library again to get the Vorpal Blade. And when they got up there, they were approached by a bunch of kobolds who started doing stuff. Well, I thought it'd be kind of cool to play a trick on my guys and use the command on the Haragon and have him leap off the platform outside, off the building.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, command says is that you can't make a creature do an action that they would deem that would hurt them. Okay. But I remember the monk had something that was safe for falling, where they basically didn't take fall damage or something like that.
Right.
So that's what I was kind of hoping that would be. I really didn't know. So I kind of went with it, and I cast command, and the first thing was like, oh, he can't do that because that will hurt him. I was like, yeah, but doesn't the monk get like slow fall or something? And he looks at the thing and goes, oh yeah, I won't take any damage from that.
Yeah,
So on my turn, I leap off the side.
So basically on your turn, you just removed him from combat completely.
Yeah.
Well done.
I mean, so like, yeah, if you don't take fall damage and someone commands you to run and jump off a building, it's not going to hurt you, so you still do that command.
Yeah. I mean, per the way command works, if it's not going to deal damage.
Yeah, what does slow fall do? Slow fall, beginning of 4th level, use reaction when you fall to reduce any falling damage you take by an amount equal to 5 times your monk level. Okay.
Right.
So, like I said, I think it was 50 feet, so that would have been 5d6, so maximum would be 30 damage. And he was level like 6 or 7. So, yeah, even at 6, he would reduce the whole damage.
Yeah. Seems like it works to me.
Goodbye, monk.
Yep. I'm going to take a look at a couple more of these really stupid rules. One of the stupidest ones I've always thought about was jumping.
We talked about the Grung that can kill himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So high jump is simply based off of your strength, period. Doesn't matter. You know, it rules as written. When you make a high jump, you leap into the air a number of feet equal to 3 plus your strength modifier if you move at least 10 feet on foot immediately before the jump.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, somebody with a 22 strength can jump 9 feet in the air if they run at least 10 feet or move at least 10 feet. Okay. That's, you know, there's some high jumpers who might be able to do that. And we're talking about superhuman levels of strength here. So, sure. The problem with this is that an elephant can also jump 9 feet in the air.
Yeah, I think we brought this up before. Elephants can't jump.
Yeah, they actually cannot jump, but there is nothing on their stat sheet that says they can't, per the rules of D&D 5e, they can jump 9 feet. So elephants are way more fucking terrifying nowadays.
Actually, bringing this up, too, because...
That means the Tarrasque could jump, like, 12 feet.
I mean, it walks like it's 20 feet, so...
Yeah.
I actually used long jump in my last Adventures League game when they were fighting the troll. There's that hole in the ship, okay? Yeah,
yep.
And I think the side that I was at, it was only like 15 feet, I think, was the gap that the troll needed to leap over. And one of the players had run all the way around to the other side of the hole, and basically he just wanted to stay at the stairs, and because they had the giant hole between him and the troll, and he could just shoot the troll from there. Well, technically, if you look at the board at the time, he was the closest person to the troll. And that's kind of how I was gauging my attacks. Plus, he hit the troll with fire. So he doesn't like him.
Yeah.
But the player's thinking, oh, I'm fine. You know, I'm at the top of this staircase, and there's a giant hole between, you know, me and the troll.
Yeah.
So I had the troll move 10 feet, jump over that pit, count out every square part of his movement, and then
trolls probably have an 18 strength, I would guess. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's 18 feet they can jump, according to the long jump rule.
Yep. And so he was right there, right next to him, just like, bam, right on the stairs. And he was like, oh, this is bad. Then he makes it 3 attacks or whatever, and he went down.
Yep.
They almost did not finish beating the troll. The troll's a CR8.
Yeah, trolls are relatively beefy. They're kind of hard to beat.
Yeah, and the thing was, too, is I started off that Adventures League encounter was like saying, I want to let you guys know I'm playing this straight from the book. I don't fudge rolls one way or the other.
It's a frost troll,
you guys,
too, yeah.
I want you guys to know that, like, you know, I'm just presenting it as it is. I want you guys to tell a creative story. I will play this as best of my ability, but I'm not being mean at all with what happens tonight. And I'm thinking of the dragging in the back of my head, but they're fighting the CR8 troll with five level 4 players, one of which decided the best course of action was to jump down into the ship and then run into one of the other rooms, but that's the room that had the 4 kobolds in it, so the 4 kobolds used their ready to action to throw their spears at the bugbear that just ran into the room, so he died.
Oh no.
So the rest of the fight was just four players versus a CR8 troll.
While the bugbear bleeds to death downstairs.
Yeah, he did do his saves, and I didn't have the kobolds like kill him, because they actually were they did actually push the troll into the pit, so yep. It landed, and it was a kobold's turn, so they just ran and rushed the troll and started stabbing the troll. Problem is, when the troll's turn came around, it just has this aura of just like cold that just hurts you. There's no save, you get hurt. So all the kobolds died. But it's weird how everything you've brought up today, I've used in the past week.
That's hilarious. Let's see if you've used this other one, because this one, I seriously doubt it, especially in Icewind Dale. Apparently, everyone in the world can hold their breath for at least 30 seconds.
So it's worse than that, because...
It is definitely worse than that by a long shot, but everyone in the world can hold it at least 30 seconds. Even a toddler, apparently, can hold it for 30 seconds, because that is the minimum... that somebody can hold their breath according to the rule book.
I mean, have you ever seen the videos that look horrifying where like parents throw their babies, like 3 to 1 year old babies into a pool?
No, I can definitely say I've never seen a video of somebody doing that, but they should probably not have a kid if they're doing that.
Well, I mean, when you get to more like, I was going to say more aquatic civilizations, when you get to more, like, lifestyles where you're swimming a lot, getting your baby to learn how to ride itself so it can start breathing and float in the water is a pretty critical thing.
Yeah, but at 1 year old, no.
No, at that age. And like, there are plenty of courses out there and training out there. And I actually saw a video on this recently where like they took the baby, he went bloop, and just threw it in the water, and the baby hit and landed, and it was like trying to ride itself and trying to figure it out. And like I'm looking at the video time, I was like, it's been in there for too long. like you could see the mom like right next to the baby, like trying to like holding herself back from grabbing the baby and like letting it and like pulling it out. But the baby did ride itself and got itself orientated and was floating there and started making the proper cries to let people know that it fell into the water. Like, I know that's a legitimate thing and it seems horrific on the outside. But I know that's an actual legitimate thing. And watching that video, that baby held its breath for a long time, more than you would think that it could.
Fair enough. Like, I learned to swim when I was 3 or 4 years old. Like, I was pretty young. I just can't imagine throwing the baby into the water. I can imagine getting in the water and holding the baby, but whatever. I am not an expert on these kind of things. I don't even have kids.
I can get that a baby can hold its breath for 30 seconds.
Fair enough. But it's the very simple fact. According to the player's handbook, a creature can hold its breath for a number of minutes equal to 1 plus its constitution modifier.
This is where it really breaks down for me.
Yeah, so if you have a constitution modifier of +4, that means you can hold your breath for at least 5 minutes. There are absolutely people who can hold their breath for 5 minutes plus. That is an absolute fact. But it ain't got shit to do with constitution modifiers. It has to do with the fact they've practiced it a lot.
I remember this came up with me when I was running Waterdeep, and I decided to basically kill a player by paralyzing him and stuffing his face into the boiling pot of a hag's boiling pot.
Okay.
And like I didn't really like, oh, you're gonna suffocate and die pretty quickly, you know.
Yeah.
But then when we kind of did the math, it's like, no, I get to hold my breath for like 14 minutes. I'm like, the fuck you do?
Yeah. Maybe 4th edition. That's not how 5th edition. But even then, 5 minutes, that's a long time.
Yeah.
Like, that's more than a paralyzed spell's gonna last.
So if you just said, a creature can hold, a medium-sized creature can hold its breath for 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Okay? That's still 5 rounds of combat.
Yep.
You can get a player out in 5 rounds of combat. Even if they start suffocating, and they start dying.
It's more than that. What is it? Yeah, I guess it would be 5 rounds. Never mind.
Yeah. So, even that, like, when a creature runs out of breath or is choking and can survive a number of rounds equal to its constitution modifier, minimum 1. So, after 5 rounds, let's say it dies. Okay, because now it's basically choking. Then it has that many
more rounds to survive. Rounds
to survive, which could, let's just say it's +4, so that's 4 more rounds. Okay, so that's another 20 seconds here. Then he goes to 0 hit points and is dying, and he can't regain hit points. And then I think it's dying, and then it starts making death saves.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you hit dead status, So assuming you just have the 30 seconds that you're allowed to hold your breath, that means that no matter what, you're still going to be able to survive for 1 minute, or maybe less than a minute. That would kind of depend on your constitution modifier, but just assuming you can last up to a minute, at that point you would probably be dead and then have to start making death saves, which is another 3 rounds if nothing hits you.
Right, and I had to look into this more, because if you start making death saves after your 5 rounds, 4 rounds, and then your death save rounds, let's say you get 3 successes, okay?
Yeah, then you're fine.
You can't be stabilized, but you're not dead.
Yeah.
So at the start of your next turn, it drops to 0 hit points, it's dying, and it can't regain hit points or be stabilized until it can breathe again. So if you continuously make death saves and you pass,
stay underwater forever.
Death save, you can stay underwater forever until
until you fail the death save.
So there's some super ass lucky halfling in the Waterdeep Harbor that's still just like passing his death saves.
Yep, been down here forever.
I live here now.
I live here now. Oh man, that's ridiculous. So it really is. The other stupidest rule, and this is the last one I'm going to talk about. But there, mind you, there are many, many more. But this one, I read it and I was like, that's just really dumb. So a creature can push, drag, or lift a weight in pounds up to 30 times its strength score. Yeah. All right. So in D&D, the average score is 10.
That's a commoner.
Most commoners would have a 10 in strength. This means that they can deadlift 300 pounds. I mean...
Well, they can push, pull, or carry.
Well, no, it says push, drag, or lift. I don't mean deadlift above your head, but I mean lift off the ground 300 pounds. I don't know about you. I wouldn't be able to get anywhere close to 300 pounds off the ground.
I have to get 300 pounds off the ground. I mean, yeah, that's just my state of life.
Well, it's a difference between walking and picking up.
If I do a squat, it's still... Yeah. Still my body weight.
Yeah, but that's not what it's talking about. An additional 300 pounds. I'm sure I know a few people who can pick up 300 pounds, but it's not a hell of a lot.
This is a different era of human being, and it's a different era of... Listen, we lost a lot when, you know, we evolved as a species, and we can't deadlift as much as we used to be able to. We're just not as strong as we used to be.
I mean, to be fair, farmers, if they were well fed, back in olden times, they were probably, I don't know about 300 pounds, but they would definitely have been stronger than I am if they were well fed. Most of them were not.
Your average farmer, your average farm kid that could chuck hay bales for 3 hours in the morning each morning is insanely strong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look at Brock Lesnar. That guy is a freak, and he's cornbread-fed country. Like, throwing hay bales and picking up cattle on his back. And that's the kind of shit that he grew up doing. But he's not most people.
Right, but when most people have to do that on a daily basis, I can understand it.
You'll definitely get stronger, but 300 pounds is still a hell of a lot. That is a lot of weight.
Listen, I'm the strong one. I'm not nervous.
I mean, I used to be able to leg press a lot more than that, but that was also when I was young and strong. Now I'm old, weak.
And my knees don't work as well anymore.
My knees don't work. My back's messed up. I got two torn ligaments in my shoulders. Yeah. I'm definitely not lifting 300 pounds. I am weaker than a commoner in D&D.
Yeah, you are. Sucker. I totally forgot what I wanted to talk about. We're actually at an hour right now, but I know there's something else I wanted to talk about. Can't remember what it is.
Well, that's good. We still managed to cover an entire podcast worth of stuff, and you'll have stuff for next week.
No, it has to be this week.
Why?
No. I know what it is. So I went out to the LARP this weekend.
Yep.
And I had to leave early, so all I could do was Friday night do my Monster Marshal stuff where I gave out the monsters, the stats that Plot told me to give out. Essentially, my job is to be logistics for the Plot team and hand out the monster stats to the monsters, so the Plot's the DM crew, and I'm just basically helping them out and giving monster stats. So they give me these monsters that pretty much, there's three different types of monsters. It was a bloated corpse. It was a zombie, a humanoid zombie, and a charred plant, okay? And I looked at these, and I was just like, okay, that's cool, because they were doing kind of like
a weird... Are they doing plants versus zombies?
No. So they split up the field battles to three separate locations because of the COVID restrictions. So there's actually three different types of field battles going on. And I don't know whether it was a copy and paste error or ease of use, but they basically had the same body and armor for every single creature.
So the charred descriptions.
The charred plants had armor somehow. And the bloated corpses had body and armor, and then the humanoid zombies had body and armor. So the humanoid zombies then had the undead information there. Right. So, like, you know, destroyed by lives and cures, they get healed by causes. The standard stuff that undead get in Shadowmoor.
Right, immune to charming magics and all that fun shit. Yeah.
But the bloated corpses did not have that.
All right.
And so I was very confused, and I had to go confirm with them, and they had to talk about it, and eventually I got the answers like, yes, they are undead, and then no, they're not undead. I honestly didn't know at the end of the night. But, you know, I did my best to help them get them out there, and everything ran fine smoothly that night. And I bring that up because, you know, as someone who has started writing D&D stuff, I got to be very careful with the wording of things. And that's pretty much what we talked about all tonight is the wording of things.
Well, we talked about it a lot lately.
Yeah. And you can't call something a bloated corpse and not have the person immediately think that it's an undead.
Yeah.
If this bloated walking corpse is walking towards me, and this other humanoid zombie is walking toward me, they're both undead. You know, the description I'm given, if I'm the player and the description I'm given, I am a bloated corpse, and the other description I'm getting is a humanoid zombie, I am adding my undead modifiers to that damage. Now, I, as a player, should be saying undead lore yes or no, and then the monster should say, yes, I'm undead, but that wasn't listed on the sheet. That's why I went and talked to plot to find out if they were undead.
Yeah.
So they could properly, you know, run the game and say whether they were. So that it's very critical of your writing stuff to make sure you have all that stuff there.
Yeah.
You don't want to get too wordy. Like, they didn't have to write out everything that we listed about what happens to undead in the game. You could just say undead package. And that's an unknown thing. We all learned something tonight that multi-attack is an action. We all learned that tonight. So, you know, there's always going to be some confusion, and that's just how things go.
In D&D, it's fairly straightforward. Like, undead are undead. You've got elementals, you've got aberrations, you've got beasts, and each one of these has sort of certain expectations of them. Like, elementals are going to have immunities and resistances and things based on what they are. Undead are probably going... They're undead, in general, in D&D, are immune to poison. I think there's another immunity to them. I don't remember what it is, but yeah, like, these are certain things. So if you have something that is one of them, it needs to be labeled that way because there are certain expectations of that.
So I bring all that up, and basically having being clear with data is super important because of what happened to me on Saturday night. I had to come home early because my daughter was sick. I didn't get a chance to be in play at all at the LARP this weekend. I just came. I came, did my monster ring shift, and went home.
Yeah, that's a long drive for that. But
it happens. But, you know, I was still good to see all my friends for a little while.
Yeah, at least for a little bit.
So I had Saturday night to myself. My daughter was down sleeping, and my wife was asleep, and I was working on Dread of the Ice Devil 2. And I have two last encounters I need to write. The final big bad encounter. Well, not the big bad, but the final encounter that leads to, like, the next part of the game, or to, like, part three. And there is a trap room that I'm writing as well, too. Now, the trap room is very specific in that it was something that I initially had in there as part of the original layout of the keep that the spear is being kept in. But I realized upon looking at the map that the location of the trap room makes absolutely no fucking sense.
All right.
So, like, you can, you if you were in the keep by itself, you would come down the stairs to where this level is, and there's a door to your front, and there's a door to your left. If you go to the left and follow all those rooms and that hallway all the way around, you wind up where the spear room is. Okay? And if you go to the door in front of you, that's where the trap room was. So the trap room was there to help keep people away from the spear.
Even though
it's not in the layout to where the spear goes. In fact, the only thing that this stops people from going to is the banquet hall and the barracks from getting to where they need to go quickly.
You definitely don't want those guards getting to and from the entrance.
Not at all. So I completely effed up the location of it. So then I was like, okay, I can fix this in post by saying that this room was now a creation of the Ice Devils, and that's why they're putting it there. You know?
All right.
But then it's like, well, what was in this room before, and why would they do that here? Why not put that more in the direct pathway of the where the spear goes? Well, it's because when I designed the room, I wanted the players to go in this kind of like weird W-shaped pattern to get through to the spear. And I pretty much did not take into effect, you know, what the layout of the building really should have been. And they could just easily bypass it.
Yeah, so basically you have accidentally written a first edition thing.
I totally messed it up. And so now I'm trying to like scramble to figure out, okay, what can I do to make this trap room seem logical and as something that would actually be put here by somebody. And like eventually, like I said, like my conclusion was I had to make it be a room that is now this room per the Stygian forces that are there.
Yep.
And that's my short answer of it. It's just very poorly written because of that. And it made me upset because like, I want to strive to be very clear and very concise with why things are where they are, you know? And here I am making one of the biggest blunders I could possibly make. And I basically had to spend all Saturday night trying to figure it out and fix the problem.
Have you seen the meme that's been floating around of Batgirl's bathroom?
No.
So it's a picture of Batgirl in the bathroom, just standing there doing her makeup or something. And the layout is the most absurd M.C. Escher thing you've ever seen. And this was probably in a real comic book. But like the bathtub is sitting on top of the rug, the throw rug that's in the bathroom, like just completely underneath the bathtub. And the bathtub is also in front of the door, the only way in and out of the bathroom. Yeah, just everything in this layout is just atrocious. And the whole meme is like, the longer I stare at this, the worse it gets. But that's kind of what it sounds like.
I see it here. So it was on our crappy design on Reddit.
Yeah.
If you ever feel useless, just remember Batgirl paid a decorator for this. And as bad as you said, the tub...
the tub blocks the door.
Blocks the door. I think someone basically drew the bathroom and then added the door afterwards, maybe by accident.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know. That is quite terrible. That also reminds me of the Simpson house.
Yeah.
So they have that one room in the Simpsons house that like they've only been in like a few episodes of the television show. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can find it here real quick. It's so like you know a couple rooms in the house. So like the kitchen, the front
living room. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they're on the couch, that's kind of like the living room that leads out to the patio.
Right.
And you can see into the other living room that they have that they usually have family meetings in. Okay.
Yep.
But if you go from the couch room to the kitchen, on the other side of the kitchen, there's like a game room that has basically like a Nintendo and a couple beanbag chairs and whatnot. And that's the rarest room that they show on The Simpsons. It's only been like a couple of episodes.
Right.
Like the house doesn't make sense unless you know that room is there.
Yeah, it's poor design. Now, obviously, with The Simpsons, they didn't really care. It's a cartoon. They're just putting stuff together.
No, and when you see the layout, it actually all makes sense. It's just without knowing that room is there, the garage just seems like it's
floating somewhere.
Yeah, it's all floating someplace. It's kind of interesting.
But yeah, design matters, layouts matter, wording matters. Everything kind of matters to an extent especially if you're writing it to sell to people.
Yeah, and especially you know. You want to avoid having your players fight a dragon when they're first level.
Or fourth level. Or any level under 10th level.
I brought it all the way back around to the start. That's a good podcast.
That is a good podcast. Good job there. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig. So long. The grumpiness has been your friend. Now go and spread anger through D&D. No, don't do that. Be happy, be friendly, be awesome. But maintain the boiling hate that inside your heart. I don't know, buddy. I'm rambling at this point. Shut me up and end this podcast.